Blog Talk Radio.
Scientists Exposed radio show, part of the Freedomizer Radio Network. Yes, we trust science. It's just scientists we don't trust. Visit madscientists.exposed for many ways to listen or call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air. Again, that number is 319-527-6208. And now, here's our lead investigator, Suzanne.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting week of Mad Scientists Exposed. And I suppose probably many of you have heard the news yesterday that David Rockefeller, the head guy for the Rockefeller Foundation, billionaire and all of that, has passed away. And I was kind of shocked to stroll through social media, and I thought it was just me. They would be, you know, kind of glad that the world has been relieved of this evil man, because you know, it's all over, you know, the mainstream media, all the beautiful glowing eulogies and all this. But the fact is, this is the top guy who is planning the eugenic vaccines against Africa and everywhere else that he decides is just too many people. And so he's, you know, he's got his Rockefeller Foundation and his laboratories and all that. Anyway, so I couldn't help myself. I had to blog yesterday about it, and I don't want to spend too much time on it today because I spent enough time blogging, but I was kind of shocked at the way I did about this man. And, you know, he's got the quiet persona and the nice smile for the camera, and there's the pictures of him shaking hands with Nelson Mandela, and I just can't participate in glorifying this man's life. I mean, I wish him rest in peace, make his restitution for God, however he's going to do that, with God, however he's going to do that. So anyway, yesterday I wrote, news has broken in glowing pre-written eulogies all over the world of the peaceful, quote-unquote, death in his sleep of mass murderer David Rockefeller, brother of mass murderer Nelson Rockefeller, and business associate of mass murderer Nelson Mandela. Why such harsh words? After all, like Adolf Hitler, David Rockefeller was also a patron of the arts, but as Rockefeller has the blood on his hands of more people than even Adolf Hitler, there is no reason we should be kinder to his memory than we are to Adolf Hitler's. The main stated purpose, and I also link to facts about Nelson Mandela and Nelson Rockefeller. I wonder if I think they were too close in age for their mothers to have named them after each other. But anyway, the main stated purpose of David Rockefeller's Rockefeller Foundation, and I link to their stated purpose, is time sensitive. This is before they find out. I mean, they say it's time sensitive. Targeted, quote-unquote, and that means in every sense of the word, intervention into other people's lives using the foundation's financial influence, quote-unquote, read bribery of governments, to impose innovations, quote-unquote, that the foundation itself invents and patents on a global scale for problems the foundation itself identifies, not because any of these people whose lives they're meddling in are asking for the foundation's help. In layman's terms, this means targeting, quote-unquote, poverty-stricken populations for intervention, and to billionaire David Rockefeller, everyone is poverty-stricken, to impose depopulation policies for their own, quote-unquote, health, read, they're too, quote, stupid, unquote, to stop having children and perpetuating humanity, and the, quote, health of the planet, unquote, as defined by the Rockefeller Foundation's religious belief that pits humanity as the enemy of the earth, rather than recognizing the dignity of each human person in maintaining his own environment. And that is a religious belief. If you believe that humanity that was born of the earth is actually an enemy of the earth, then that's a religious belief. and you shouldn't be imposing your depopulation agendas on people who don't believe that. Anyway, in practical terms, this means developing eugenic anti-fertility vaccines targeting women and girls of childbearing age to induce miscarriages when they refuse to abort, weaponizing other vaccines to target the general population in insatiably growing numbers, as death cults are wont to do, with disabling diseases to ensure that even if the populations don't die right away, they'll be unable to raise families of their own, thus tricking entire populations into committing mass suicide, parenthesis genocide, in order to clear the earth for takeover ownership by the few family members and friends of David Rockefeller's left on the earth. And I link to Eugenics Today, How Vaccines Are Used to Sterilize the Masses, and Part 2, Rockefeller Anti-Fertility Vaccines Exposed. At least on paper, killing by tainted vaccine looks cleaner than Hitler's slaughterhouses, and that's how David Rockefeller plans to present himself on his judgment day, facing his maker and facing all the millions of his victims who have already met their demise at his hands. Indeed, if the Rockefeller Foundation's religious mission of depopulating the earth is not stopped, the number of their victims will indeed reach into the many billions, as is the stated goal of this religion, to eliminate 7 billion of the world's 7.5 billion people. Will the covert murder and mayhem stop now that David Rockefeller has mercifully for us left this world? Not likely. He has been cultivating fellow billionaire Bill Gates as his protege in arrogance and hiding the Rockefeller Foundation behind Gates's Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as the more public face for influencing, parenthesis, bribing governments for imposing the ultimate solution of depopulating their own countries using covertly weaponized vaccines. As David Rockefeller has aged, Bill Gates has been the point man in talks and videos, and I link to those, announcing the plan to reduce world population, meaning you and me, not himself, of course, with weaponized vaccines, while telling the people of third world nations that those vaccines are beneficial, that they're merely tetanus vaccines or Ebola vaccines or Zika vaccines or, God help us, a vaccine for the brand new, deadly lab-engineered bird flu, and I link to that, which actually doesn't affect birds so as to better infect people, the real target. As Bill Gates promises, only in the last few days, this new weaponized bird flu and its associated weaponized vaccines are designed to take out massive swaths of 30 million people at a time. Something about mass murderers of a feather flocking together. And then I have the footnotes on Nelson Mandela and Nelson Rockefeller, who was David Rockefeller's brother. So that's all the time I want to spend on David Rockefeller today. The topic that I stumbled on this afternoon, and of course, you know, I never really thought about it in many years because I don't know many people with HIV, but I stumbled on a documentary today that has been banned in several European film festivals, and that is, the name of the documentary is Positively, the name of the book that it's based on is called Positively False. The name of the documentary is Positive Health. And that documentary, I just stumbled on a 10-minute video talking about how it was censored in like several different European and British film festivals. And, you know, they'd be all set. It's the same story as Vaxxed in the American film festival, that they'd be all set to show this documentary. And the documentary was actually made in 2014, but it's only just making it to the U.S., I guess. But they'd be all set to screen, and just a couple of days before that film festival, they would get an email saying that that it's being pulled, that they've had complaints at the festival or the bookstore or the screening, the venue. They've had complaints from, quote-unquote, HIV charities, but they never name who the charities are, and it's just too much controversy, and they're not going to show it. And what this documentary is, it interviews five people in Spain who were diagnosed with HIV many years ago, like 27 years ago, is pretty much all of them. And some of them refused right at the start to take the antiviral drugs. This is right at the beginning of the AZT. They could have had AZT or not. Some of them took the drugs for a few years and just couldn't take the side effects anymore, or recognize that the side effects were actually causing the illness, that they had been healthy before taking the drugs. And the one woman, she was diagnosed with HIV positive, but she felt fine. She felt fine. She went on and she had two children since then. I think I think she's, I don't think that both girls have the same father, but whatever, she's been married to this other guy for 27 years. He has never caught HIV from her. They have another child together of their own. The first child, she did not take drugs. She just felt fine. She didn't think about it. I think maybe she didn't have any prenatal care or anybody to hound her. And so she didn't take any drugs. She was fine. The baby was born HIV positive and reverted to HIV negative in about 18 months because that's when the child's own immune system took over and she wasn't dependent on her own on her mother's antibodies that were coursing through both of their bloodstreams. The second child, the medical people prevailed upon her to take drugs during her pregnancy and to have the baby on drugs until she was HIV negative also 18 months later. And both girls are adults now and healthy, but one has a very strange skin condition is what the mother says. Now, the documentary, maybe that's why it's so slow coming over to the U.S. The documentary itself is half in English, half in Spanish. When there's people speaking English on the screen, the subtitles are in Spanish. And when there's people speaking Spanish on the screen, the subtitles are in English. So it's fascinating. And I had heard this years ago, I mean, before I was alerted to the whole vaccine hoax and before I was alerted to the cancer drugs killing people faster than cancer does. A long, long time ago, I was in a discussion forum and somebody mentioned, well, if you just, you know, eat right and take your, you know, eat your nutritious foods and all that, you can overcome even HIV. And I thought, well, that's, I don't know if I believe that. You know, this is, I was just beginning to wake up. And so now the one lady, she kind of, in a documentary, she kind of had an attitude like mine. She just, I don't know, she was upset. She believed that she was going to die, but she felt good, and she only felt bad when she took the drugs, and so she wouldn't take them. And the reason that this kind of, another reason that this kind of rang a bell with me, besides the similarity to other diseases and the drugs being worse than the diseases themselves, is, you know, we have a couple of stories. One is a young man that I knew in my 20s. He was actually a schoolmate of my sister's. And he, very, you know, gregarious kind of guy and very flamboyant. And so he was probably gay. We don't really know. But the odds are he was. But he was very flamboyant. He became, what do they call it, a flight attendant. I think back in those days they were stewardesses and stewards. And he was a flight attendant for, you know, about a year or so. He would call my sister from around the world, you know, to come back with stories about countries and stuff. And he was diagnosed HIV positive. And within about a year, he was dead. And that was it. And it was a horrible thing. He was in his early to mid-20s when he died. And it was just a horrible thing. He had so much to offer the world. And it was just really, really sad. Now, a few years after that, let's see, I went and I wanted to donate blood. And I had had the flu like a couple of weeks prior. I'd been over the flu for a few days. So I probably shouldn't have gone to donate blood because I probably had a higher antibody count for just in general. And in fact, after I did give the blood, I relapsed. So I should not have given blood at that time. But they sent me back a letter. This was the Red Cross. And they sent me back a letter and they said, oh, well, we couldn't use your blood, meaning they had to discard it, because we tested it and you tested positive for HIV. But, you know, don't be too worried because sometimes this comes out as a false positive and just go get tested again. Well, I blew it off. I really had never thought about it the rest of my life pretty much because I was not in any of the categories with behaviors that were supposed to be the signature behaviors as to how you actually catch AIDS. So I blew it off. I went on with my life. I was married. I went on to have three children. They're all grown adults now. Never had them tested. I never had myself tested again. You know, it was just one of those things. But, of course, the Red Cross would never take my blood again unless I proved to them that I didn't have HIV. So I never did give blood again. And that's kind of a shame. But whatever, I guess they work real hard to, maybe they want, I don't know, but of course you don't want to put anybody at risk, and you know what, since I did relapse back into the flu after giving that blood, even though I had been over it, I'm glad they didn't give it to anybody, because I certainly don't want to give anybody the flu that year. And I don't think I even had a vaccine that year, but I don't know where I got it, other than I was sharing an office in those days, and there were no cell phones in those days, and there was only one phone in the office. And so we both were using the phone, and we both pretty much had the flu all winter. It was on and off and on and off. We would alternate being sick with colds and flus and stuff, and it was just, it was a mistake to share the phone, but I don't know if we even had disinfectant wipes at the time, but I should have had some, you know, wet paper towels around and a spray bottle or something. You know? Anyway, that was a story back then. I mean, I've since learned about the importance of nutrition. It wasn't that big of a thing in those days. And what can I tell you? So if you have any comments or experience with this kind of thing, I have a whole bunch of articles lined up that we can go through. But, you know, give a call. The number here is 347-324-3704, 347-324-3704. I've got the entire documentary. Well, first I've got the 10-minute expose on this film being banned in several film festivals in Europe. But I've got the link to the film festival. It just played this past weekend in Queen's World Film Festival 2017, just this past weekend. So that's why it's a timely thing for right now. But I've also got the documentary itself embedded at madscientist.exposed. That's my website. Or you can go right to the film website, which is positivehell.com. Positive, positivehell.com. That's the name of the film. And it's based on the book Positively False, which is actually in its, I think, its 16th, 17th year. Because it celebrated its 16th anniversary edition in 2015, so that's 2 years ago. And anyway, you know, so the book is available, the documentary is available. The documentary is only a half hour long, but it's still fascinating to watch. So I thought back to that one discussion I had with somebody who was like one of the first people I ever knew into curing diseases with natural herbs, and he was into rice too, which I think I've done a show on rice frequency disease remission. But he was also into the healthy nutritional studies. And all the rice is just a stopgap. You have to have a healthy immune system, and you got to feed it right. So anyway, so I found a website called Living Without HIV Drugs, HIV. Positive people who have never taken the drugs. And that's kind of an interesting thing. HIV people have never taken HIV drugs or have stopped taking them. Living Without HIV Drugs. This website is dedicated to the true life stories of people who have two important things in common. One, we have all been diagnosed as HIV positive at some point in our lives. And I can't say I was diagnosed HIV positive. I can say I had a test, but there was no doctor involved, so there was no official diagnosis in my personal case. And so I blew it off. But anyway, these people have all been diagnosed as HIV positive at some point in our lives. And two, we have all stopped or never started taking the HIV medications normally prescribed by our doctors and clinics and hospitals and are living healthy, happy lives. So we want to share our stories with you in hopes that they can be an inspiration and provide you with the hope that you too can live without HIV drugs and their very serious and damaging side effects. Keep in mind that the HIV medications that you may be taking now or will probably be pressured into taking if you are newly diagnosed as HIV positive have been proven to be more dangerous than HIV itself. According to a presentation at the AIDS conference in Barcelona in 2002 and a scientific study published in the Journal of Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, December 2003, more HIV positives are dying from organ failure as a side effect from the HIV drugs than are dying from AIDS. And according to the largest and longest scientific study of AART, that means highly active antiretroviral therapy, the drugs being given today are even more dangerous and offer no increase in longevity than those given in 1996. In the left-hand column is a list of names in alphabetical order of those who want to share their stories with you. Simply click on a name to read their story. Some of them also have an email address at the bottom of the story if you would like to communicate with them directly. And some of them are available to listen to, excuse me, as podcast is clicking here and they have a link. In the right-hand column are links to other important HIV/AIDS websites, including two free books. If you would like to share your story with us and others who might be in your same or similar situation, please click here. And they've got another page to go to, feedback. So this person from Puerto Rico writes, wow, I'm on the website, videos and testimonies of people leaving the pills for better health. I had a professor in university who told us about how HIV/AIDS has been a lie and how it does work, but I have never understood it until now. I have been told that I have HIV, and day by day, I'm more curious about this. I'm looking to change my life. I'm looking to be healthy. I'm looking to change myself and will try to help others. I live with the information you guys give as well as everything I can find in libraries and online websites. Thank you for making this information accessible and easy to find. I'll keep seeing documentaries and reading information. My next step is going to be to leave my pills and be always healthy. I know I can. That's really scary for somebody that's had a doctor tell them, we've done all these tests and you're positive and you're going to die unless you take these drugs. That is really scary to walk away from those drugs, and because that's what mainstream medicine says. But these people in this video, Positive Hell, there's an edge of a little bit of not. Well, some of them are more bitter than others. The one lady just, she was really, really depressed about it for years and years. And when she first started realizing she wasn't going to die, even without the drugs, and she started reading, and the internet came out. Her daughter, her older daughter is 27 years old. And, I know that's back in the early 90s. People were just starting to get online with the website, with the web. The web was only invented in 1990, and it went to the general public in like 1994, I think. And so, her daughter was several years old by the time she even had a chance to read about these other people's experiences besides her own. She just knew she felt better if she didn't take the drugs, so she didn't take them. And she started reading how more and more people are coming out of the woodwork saying, no, we don't take the drugs. And the people that do take the drugs die before we do. And this group of five people in one little section of Spain, that's what this documentary is on, that's what they said. We're all here today, and our other people that we know are not. And so there's some kind of hoax here. So this lady, first she went from angry because she felt lied to just kind of relieved and just kind of giggly, laughing, because, once she realized she's not going to die, it's like having this big weight lifted off her. And her family doesn't have to worry, her husband doesn't worry. He's been with her all these years, and he's never tested positive. And I guess they must be testing her positive, through the years, because they've been testing him through the years, and he keeps coming up negative. And they've been testing her daughters. The daughters tested positive until they were a year and a half old, and then they were negative. And they've, tested him a few times since then, but otherwise not. And so, their story appears to be more common than usual. The other people in that documentary were several men. Now, the documentary was released in 2014. It's just hitting the American film festivals now, like this past weekend. So, but the one guy is deceased now, and he's the one guy in the documentary that he was very thin, and it looked like he was very tall. And he kind of looked like a smoker. I would have placed him as older than myself, and I'm not a smoker, but it turns out that he died of lung disease and some other issues that he had going on due to the lifestyle that he was living all this time, as far as his nutrition level and his lung condition. It was smoking eventually that killed him, and one other gastric thing he had going on. But the rest of them, the one guy was a doctor diagnosed, and I don't know why these people believe the diagnosis. I know what happened to me, and I wasn't practicing any of the lifestyle things. I blew it off. I knew it was false, and I didn't even bother retesting. But these people believed that it could be true, and when they retested, they kept getting positive. But the one guy was a doctor. He says, I've never believed in antivirals, in my medical practice for my patients, and I don't believe in it for myself, and I've been taking care of myself and living a normal life. My son lives with me and all this. And another guy says, it was a big burden for a bunch of years, and I did take the drugs for a few years, and I started getting nerve problems in my right hand. I started getting pain, and I couldn't use my hand, and it wouldn't work right, and I knew it was the drugs, so I stopped the drugs, and the use of his hand returned, and, you know, he just works hard every day, you know, eating right and exercising. He says he jogs or walks 12 kilometers a day. That's kind of a lot. that's kind of a lot. What is that, 5-6 miles? I don't know. And he bicycles. And he keeps himself healthy, and he's, pushing it. You know, he's up in his 50s and 60s. And the other guy went to... I'm losing track of who's in there. But anyway, if you want to join this conversation, again, the number is 347-324-3704, and we can go through some more articles. I have a link to the book, Positively False, and you can watch the documentary right at madscientist.exposed. And I have just a whole bunch of, you know, and once you know what to search on, that people are living without the drugs for HIV, you can search up tons and tons of articles. So it's quite a nice thing. I don't want to encourage people who are afraid of doing something like this. I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying there are people out there, and people have to do their own research, read all the adverse reactions in the package inserts, read every package insert for every drug that you're taking, if you are taking HIV drugs, and read the package inserts, because the adverse reactions, because they list them, because they do happen to people. And I've never seen a drug that didn't list something really drastic in its package insert. So anyway, we have a caller. It's our friend Ed. And everybody else, give a call too. Well, it's spinning. Can you hear me, Ed? No. Oh. This interface, you click on it to take the call, and there it's buffering. Are you there now?
Hello. Yes,
hi.
I'm here.
Hi.
Well, I don't know if I can contribute very much except for, you know, just telling where I've been at different times in my life. And one of those was, it was ironic. I was living in San Francisco, very happy with my first wife. I want everybody to know, no, I'm not gay. No, I'm not bisexual. I would not have been catching, HIV. But anyway, our marriage broke up. I hung around there for a few years and dated actually quite a few women. And then I met someone that I remarried, and we moved out of town. And that was in about 1982, 1983. And do you know, that was just on the very cusp of the AIDS epidemic, you know. It just came out. In the, right about that year, and you'll remember because I think you were probably in college that year, weren't you? Were you going at U of A?
1982. Well, I was taking some grad classes at that point. Yeah.
Grad classes. Oh, yeah. But anyway, it was odd, because when I remarried, we moved out of San Francisco, and I still had real estate in San Francisco, so I commuted into town every so often. I was trying to be a real estate agent, so I worked for.
Yeah.
One and then another real estate. But I found that living 30 miles away and having to cross the Bay Bridge every day was absurd, And so I kind of blame my moving out of San Francisco for having to sell my real estate. But if I had stayed in San Francisco, then who knows what would have happened, Because it was going around. San Francisco was probably like New York City. It was hit with incredible amount.
You mean if you hadn't met your
HIV.
Second wife and moved, are you saying you would have been with a lot more people than you were?
I'm sorry, was that a question? I couldn't understand you.
No, I was just asking. Do you think you would have fallen into a higher risk category had you not married and moved out of town?
I don't know. I just don't know because I still, if I had stayed in San Francisco or if I eventually broke up with her. And if I had gone back to San Francisco, I would have continued dating women. But who knows, the germ was in the air, so to speak, and there was a possibility that I would have dated somebody who had been dating someone who was in a high-risk category. Hard to tell.
Like drug
so
users?
I missed it. You know what I missed? I missed all the pain and suffering and seeing people you know, sick and in the hospital and visiting anybody in the hospital and them dying and everything. That was, it was something that I did not experience, because shortly after that I moved rather far away and I became kind of a hermit for about 10 years. You know, I just was not social. I actually stopped dating for a long time after my second marriage.
Wow.
Then let's see. That's,
well,
that's,
yeah, I've heard twice. You don't want to do that again.
No, no. Then the story goes up to 1999 when I moved to a place called Henderson, Nevada. And it was a four-bedroom home, and I found that I had a next-door neighbor. It was annoying as hell, because he would always sit on his front porch. There'd be a big white cloud of smoke blowing at me, you know, from 20 or 50 feet away. He was, he explained to me, this was medical marijuana. He said, oh, don't worry about it. It's medical marijuana. And he says, I have it for my, treating my AIDS, you know. I said, oh, okay, wow, really? He's, oh, yeah, you know, it's great. So he was on his medical marijuana. Believe me, he was feeling no pain. Now, now I don't know what other
or nausea.
Kind of medicine.
It settles your nausea, too, doesn't it?
Is it?
Doesn't
is it
settle your nausea, too? Doesn't it settle nausea, too?
I think it helps. It kills nausea, yeah. And he was on some other meds. He didn't go into it, you know, because once he broadcast that he was, he had HIV, I felt a little uncomfortable. I don't think I ever got closer than about 30 or 40 feet, you know,
yeah,
to his porch. So I was sort of like yelling over to him, how you doing? He'd ask me, and I'd ask him. Never saw the inside of his house. And because it was this natural diffidence, this kind of self-protection.
Yeah, and you weren't going to eat off the dishes or anything like that.
I didn't know. It's sort of like, you know, just shaking hands with a guy, I would feel uncomfortable, you know, at that point.
Yeah, somebody's funny.
But he,
and
yeah.
These people, they do mention that. They don't dwell on it in this documentary, but they do mention, some of them do mention becoming social pariahs, because it was, you know, early on, the whole HIV epidemic thing.
Well, what do you
and
mean by,
people?
What do you mean by social pariahs? I don't know what you mean by that.
Nobody wanted to be around them, shake their hands, you know, just
right.
By and, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
That, they didn't dwell on that. They didn't dwell on that.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's where the hell comes from in the positive
yeah.
health title. It's like in the in the ancient biblical days, nobody would be around lepers, that kind of stuff. Now we just give an antibiotic.
This particular guy was definitely not lonely, because he had two kids that were grown by that time. I think they're about 18 or 25, something like that. And they would come visit him once in a while, and he would talk about them. And then he had first one girlfriend, and then he had another girlfriend who were, they both became live-in girlfriends, because I would see them once in a while, or the two of them would be sitting on the porch or something. So, gosh, you know, I mean, they were taking a risk, I guess, but who knows? Maybe they were just friends. Maybe they just held hands, you know. But I imagine
I
that
know.
These people with HIV had a very difficult time because of, well, these people like me. Oh, my goodness, they got HIV. I better, you know, keep my distance, you know. And it, I just couldn't imagine getting
what?
That friendly. I could not imagine getting friendly enough to actually go visit, to come over for a snack or to sit back and, you know, watch him smoke or anything.
Well, you know, back in those days, we weren't used to the paradigm of, gee, somebody in the medicine is lying to us. You know, that was actually a few years before the pediatrician lied to me about the aborted human fetal cells in the chickenpox vaccine. We weren't used to the medical community lying to us. And these people are implying that they're lying.
Yeah.
Now, they don't come right out and say, well, the one guy does, you know, that this is some kind of big lie, and it's actually the drugs that are killing you, but they'll milk you for every cent you're worth before you die. And then he's kind of like really sarcastic. Yeah, look what they're doing to Africa. You know? And that makes me think that maybe we're dealing with two different diseases here, because in Africa, it's supposedly spread heterosexually. And it doesn't spread heterosexually anywhere else in the world, unless there's some kind of genetic predisposition or there's not as good nutrition level, which that's probably likely in Africa. But it's sure they're targeting, you know, it's certainly I've seen people online talk about how HIV was lab engineered to depopulate the world, and you know, these are people that started paying attention to these, to the depopulation agenda before I did. I thought it was like those were just freaks, people who want to kill everybody else without killing themselves. Yeah. You know, I just thought they were freaks, but now I realize they're not freaks. You know, there are. So yeah, I guess they would target Africa for the larger population, mm-hmm. since the homosexual population is so much smaller. Then they would fine tune their lab disease to take out the larger part of the population there, and so you have all these orphans growing up, and or they starve to death or whatever. It's just been devastating to the African mm-hmm. continent. Now the children mm-hmm. that are left are growing up, so we'll see if they can shake mm-hmm. off these predators, especially with David Rockefeller gone now, but now we have Bill Gates as his protege. You know, all these billionaires rubbing elbows.
Can you
know, they would just go away and solve their own problems.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
let me mention one other thing that I thought was funny. Once he's sitting on the porch with his girlfriend, and I'm 20 or 30 feet away, and they're sitting on the porch, and he's smoking weed, you know, and big cloud of white smoke and everything, passes over to her, and she takes a toke, a nice deep toke, you know, to get it in her lungs. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that thing just went from his lips to her lips, and now it's going back again. I said, does she not have the fear, you know, the fear of God?
From his what? From his lungs or his blood?
Well, no, I mean, it goes from his lips to her lips when they're passing a joint back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, how does she reconcile that? You know, it just seems like that might be a way of transmitting it. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it needs to be something more intimate.
Well, in
like,
those days, they were
blood.
Doing a lot of shell games. They were doing a lot of shell games as to how you actually capture it, catch it. I remember a talk show one time, and I don't know if it was Phil Donahue or who it was. This guy, his son was in the hospital and needed surgery. And what they wanted to do was put off the surgery long enough so that everyone in the family could donate blood, you know, be all tested, and they could stockpile blood just for that son.
Right.
And they had an AIDS doctor on there to argue with him. And they, you know, it was staged for TV, but these were real people. And they were trying to insist to this guy that blood transfusions do not transmit HIV. Do not, do not, do not. He goes, well, if it's body fluids and you can get it from sex, you know, and you can get it from sharing needles as a drug user, how the hell can you look at me with a straight face and tell me my son can't get AIDS from your blood transfusion? And they argued, and you know, the doctor looked like a real ass. He really did, because the logic was flawless, of course. But they were trying to make the public believe crap, just like they're doing now with the vaccine. Oh, well, we can inject mercury into your little baby, and it'll be totally fine. You know, there's one guy even in California that Senator Pan, I believe, he said that, oh, you could inject, you know, 1,000, 10,000 vaccines into a child and wouldn't harm them at all.
Yeah.
And people are like, dared him. They've dared him. Well, we'll pay you to take 10,000 vaccines. And he won't yet. And, in fact, Natural News, the guy in Natural News, Mike Adams, has put out a reward, $100,000 if you'll drink the contents of a vaccine rather than inject it, you know, since drinking should be so much safer than even injecting it. So I'll pay you to drink it, and nobody's taking them up on it yet. Any of these pro-vaccine scientists here up on vaccines. It's like the same story. They were trying to force that man to believe a blood transfusion from a stranger was no risk. And in those days, they weren't testing the blood supply. And they realized the whole blood industry was going to collapse if they didn't start testing the donated blood. So they did finally start testing the donated blood. So it was like, I think it was probably 89. I think it was January of 89 when they told me that, oh, well, you tested positive. Well, I know it was a false positive because I had just gotten over the flu, and giving the blood actually caused me to relapse. So that's what they actually detected. Sure. But, and so they were testing by then. But in the early to mid-80s, they were refusing, and they were trying to make people believe. And then there was that story of that dentist. I don't know if you remember the guy in Florida who really, really – I don't know what his problem was, but he had this beautiful teenage girl as patient. He was a dentist, and he injected, you know, under the guise of injecting Novocaine into her mouth, injected her with HIV. Now, I don't know where he got it, but he intentionally injected her with HIV
Was she a random victim? I mean, or did he specifically?
No, I think he targeted her because she was young and beautiful. There are just hateful people out there. He couldn't have her, so nobody's going to have her. You know. Anyway, so they went to trial. She was in her teens. I think he was in his 30s. So it went to trial. They charged him, and she was wasting away. And I presume, the story was because she had AIDS. Well, she had AIDS because she was taking the drugs. So anyway, she died. I think he's still in prison.
How did they link the dental work that he did with her contracting the HIV? How would they ever know?
Because she was in a zero risk category, like I was. Like I blew it off because I knew that I was not taking recreational drugs. And my then husband and I, we were virgins. Husband and I were virgins when we married. And that's how I knew that it was Kimberly Bergalis is her name, Wikipedia. She's got a Wikipedia article. And Kimberly Bergalis, 1968 to 1991, was an American woman who was one of six patients purportedly infected with HIV by dentist David J. Acer, who had the disease AIDS. So that's where he got it. So he was mad at the world that he was going to give it to other people. This incident is the first known case of clinical transmission of HIV. Background, the eldest of three daughters, Bergalis was born in Tamaqua, Pennsylvania. Oh, I thought it was Florida. I'm sorry. In 1968, where her family lived until moving to Florida. In 1978. In 1985, she enrolled at the University of Florida and majored in business. In December of 87, Dr. David Acer removed two of Bergalis' molars. Acer was HIV positive at the time, having been diagnosed that fall. In March of 89, Bergalis began to show symptoms of AIDS and was diagnosed with the disease in January 1990. So I guess AIDS really did have symptoms. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in this report said that she had likely acquired her infection from her dentist, prompted Acer to write an open letter requesting that his patients be tested for HIV infection. The Florida Department of Health and Rehabilitative Services tested over 1,000 patients, discovering two additional HIV-positive patients. The CDC would eventually identify a total of 10 HIV-positive former patients of Acer and link the infections of six to their dentist. Now, there was an investigation, political reaction. During the last months of her life, Bergalis' case was cited by some politicians and journalists as an example of blameless HIV infection that had been allowed to happen due to the CDC and the healthcare industry being overly responsive to the concerns of AIDS activists and the gay community. In an obituary, the National Review wrote that Bergalis, quote, came to feel she had a special calling to bring a glimmer of truth, however forlorn, into a debate characterized by confusion, denial, smugness, and suicidal self-indulgence. Quote, no sexual history is how the jaded describe a chaste woman of 23 who, as Ms. Bergalis explained to disbelieving interviewers, quote, wanted to wait for marriage, unquote. Marriage and its joys will never come for Kimberly Bergalis, but her integrity and courage, she affirmed that other things were also precious. Why posthumous controversy? I don't know that he went to trial. I thought he did. I thought they put him in jail for that. I believe it was intentional. I mean, dentists wear gloves in your mouth. You know, what was he injecting her from with? None of Bergalis' former boyfriends were tested positive for HIV. Anchors argued that the CDC may have botched the genetic test that proved that Bergalis had some strain of HIV as her dentist. The same strain. It was shortly after her death. Small park on Hutchison Island was renamed Kimberly Bergalis Park in her memory. So that's the story. Nobody says how he infected them. Other than, I saw him interviewed or something. I forget why I remember that he was really a nasty person.
Yeah.
But they're not going to say that, this is a PC website, Wikipedia. They're not going to tell anything controversial. But I don't see how he gave her HIV when my whole life dentists have been wearing masks and gloves. And she was certainly born quite a bit after I was. So anyway. Uh-huh. So if he didn't go to jail, he should have. So, and that was back in the days. They were trying to tell us, oh, no, you can get AIDS. You know, I don't know, just changing the story to fit whatever political agenda they had at the moment. So there's a bunch of articles here. NPR did a story a while back in 2013. More patients keep HIV at bay without antiviral drugs. That's NPR. Surviving AIDS without drugs. Resistance is fruitful is another website. That's kind of, you know, fruitful as in you'll live longer without the drug. Huh, most HIV-positive Americans go with treatment. CBS News. Well, that's an interesting one. Maybe they're presuming that everybody has it and nobody does. I don't know. But if they catch you, boy, they'll drug you. Most HIV-positive Americans go without treatment. This is CBSNews.com. Advances in scientific research. Yeah. Advances in scientific research on HIV have helped to develop medication that transformed a once deadly virus into a chronic condition. This has allowed people with HIV to live long and full lives. However, despite the effectiveness of antiretroviral medications, many Americans who have been diagnosed with HIV are not monitored by doctors and don't receive these life-saving drugs. Are they trying to say that they're not living? How do they go on? Do they need the drug? I mean, if they're living without them? A new report released on Tuesday, and what's the date on this? This was November 26, 2014. Lost my place. I'm sorry. A new report released on Tuesday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found only 30% of 1.2 million Americans living with HIV actually have the disease under control. Additionally, as much as two-thirds of people diagnosed with HIV are not receiving medical care or regularly taking antiretroviral medications that can keep the fatal disease from progressing or help it along, you know? For people living with HIV, it's not just about knowing you're infected. It's also about going to the doctor for medical care. Tom Frieden, director of the CDC, said in a press statement, said for healthcare facilities, it's not just about the patients in your care. It's every person diagnosed, and every person whose diagnosis has not yet been made. The key to controlling the nation's HIV epidemic is helping people with HIV get connected to and stay in care and treatment to suppress the virus, live longer, and help others. Now, the documentary that I saw today hinted that some people are diagnosed positive when they're not. I mean, yes. I mean, they're led down the road, told that they're HIV positive when presumably the doctors know they're not. That's pretty sad. That's like the doctors who went to jail over diagnosing people with cancer who didn't have it. Or the people who should go to set jail, we've had people come out of Planned Parenthood saying, yes, we tell girls they're pregnant when they're not, so just so we can do abortions on them. So, I mean, it's pretty bad. So this article goes on and on about how people without drugs should be getting them, you know. But if they're living fine and healthy without them, why should they be pushed on them? Comment. I wonder if sometimes you get more information in the comments, and you can too.
You know what? The medical community is taking advantage in a way of people's natural fear. It's like, okay, you've got a fatal disease that's going to kill you unless you do exactly what we say. Now here's the different therapies and treatments, blah blah blah.
And then
they take pretty much whatever it is, because otherwise it's almost like one of these famous death notices, you know, they give you, say, well, you've got fourth stage cancer and you've got 6 months to live, you know, and then of course you can die just from the diagnosis. But I think there's a ray of hope, and that is that the meds are getting better, aren't they? I mean, aren't they? Isn't it said that people are living much longer now?
Well, I think
on the treatments.
Yeah, AZT came out and
having a normal life.
In the late 80s, well, that one woman in Spain, she did take AZT during her pregnancy and for a while afterwards, and they had the baby on it too. And that's the child now that has the skin condition. But, there's three comments here from 2014 on this CBS article. At $10,000 a month for the antiretroviral medications, how can anyone expect that people with HIV are going to be universally treated? That's the copay on a drug that costs over $100,000 a year. Or what's the copay on it? And then, but wait, I thought Obamacare was going to fix everything. Don't forget that many states like Texas forbid enrolling low-income people into Medicaid so they have no insurance and can't afford any insurance. Well, this is this is after Obamacare, those millions will probably not see a doctor unless it is a visit to a hospital emergency room, and obviously they can't afford to pay for prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all, the three of these people are just talking about the cost of the drugs. They're
mm-hmm.
not addressing the fact that the drugs causing some of the symptoms that make the ends of these people's lives miserable, or in fact cause the ends of their lives, like happens to so many cancer patients. But I'm intrigued about those quote unquote charities that forced those film festivals to yank the documentary, because it's kind of like the same story, you know. These charities that are just fronts for pharmaceutical
mm-hmm.
stuff, like the American Cancer Society. It's all about marching and collecting money, but it's, you know, perpetual research. Mm-hmm. And boy, were they upset this week when Trump introduced his budget to Congress and it had drastic rollbacks for cancer research funding. And, you know, people were, I forget what website
okay.
I was on,
they
but people were like, how
yeah.
did So, yeah, I think, well, I remember when, I'm old enough to remember when Nixon announced the war on cancer and the research
right.
dollars he was going to make
right.
available, and I'm like, oh, my God, we'll never have a cure now. And I was a kid, and I figured it out.
You know,
sometimes I figure things out later in life, but at that time I knew we would always have cancer because the money would be in research, and once you find the answer, the money stops. So,
well, I wonder if anybody I wonder if anybody in the administration is going to answer to that. I mean, who is who's his health and education guy? Who's his person that could respond to that? In other words, the reason they're cutting back on that is because paying money for research doesn't seem to find a cure. It hasn't since the Nixon administration. The way to find a cure would be to offer a prize. You know, for a cure.
That's exactly what
that
I told these people. Yeah,
well,
I said, you watch.
You're
not seeing it now, or they're not publicizing it. But I'm absolutely sure
yeah.
that that's what Trump is going to offer instead. Is
a
prize for finding.
But you don't know for a fact that they've thought of doing that. That they're going to do that. Have you? I mean, has that come out? It makes sense.
I just know he's smart.
You know, if they take away the research money,
I know Trump is
going to offer a prize instead.
Well, okay, so I'll blog. Because you know what happens, and this happens, this has happened a couple of times, where I will blog an answer to some particular problem that the media is stewing about, and I'm like, I'll write an open letter to Trump and blog it, and I'll put actually his Twitter handle in my title, and I have my
okay.
website automatically tweeted. So if anybody on his team is going to see it, you know, it's that way, because I don't have his email address. Anyway, this has happened a couple of times where I'll make a suggestion, and sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's less than a week. He actually implements what I'm suggesting. Now, I can't prove it. Just like the thing with the antibiotic for schizophrenia and the Jared Loughner mass shooting guy in Tucson, you know, that got him out of the insane asylum and into, you know, prison because they,
uh-huh.
you know, I wrote to his lawyer and I suggested, hey, they're finding this antibiotic cures a lot of schizophrenia. Maybe it can help him progress his trial along. And within 5 months, he was
yeah.
well enough to spend his life away. So these kinds of things happen. And if you just pay attention, but then, so I'll tweet him or I'll blog him or whatever. And this has happened once or twice. Now, I'm not necessarily saying, okay, Trump is taking my advice. But what I'm saying is, if you just a little bit smart, you can figure this stuff out. And so I know darn well, coming from the background that he does with reality TV or whatever, and his show that was prize oriented, he'll offer a prize, you know, for finding the cure. And since we already know from alternative medicine dozens of cures for cancer, you bet there'll be people mm-hmm. running to collect the prize and officially announce the cure, so that all of mainstream medicine has to acknowledge it. You know, cures for cancer. We'll have them darn quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and forget the perpetual futile research that never finds it, because once they find it, you reverse the table. Okay, there's no pay in not finding it. You'll have pay in finding it, you know, because whatever you fund, you're going to get more of. So
if
you're going to fund research, perpetual research. But if you fund cures, you'll get cures, you know. So I think that's what's going on with AIDS, too. I think there's perpetual research
mm-hmm.
going on with AIDS. But, you know, they've kind of got it, you know, where they want it now. They're just collecting forever, you know, for these super expensive drugs, and I think once the patents run out on those, we'll have a new round of the drugs, unless somebody comes out with a prize award for finding the cure for AIDS. And I think there's a multitude of those, you know, that we have. There's the Rife machines and the zappers, you know, that kill microbes in living, you know, in your body without harming human tissue. So, you know, I think it's a big world out there, and if we just start offering rewards instead of perpetual research, so I think these are all like telling the same story.
Suzanne, you should offer a reward. Figure out a good reward. Pool some money from some friends and businesses and offer a reward for, you know, solving the mystery of cancer. It's out there.
Well, I don't have the resources right now to offer a reward.
I'm just saying, okay, I just don't think David Rockefeller,
it looks to alternative medicine. But to force mainstream medicine, I don't have the resources to do that, to force mainstream medicine to admit that we have cures for these things.
Don't you think that David Rockefeller and the Rothschilds and Bill Gates would be able to access some kind of better cancer therapy if they needed it?
These guys are already billionaires. They're already billionaires. Their real purpose is to depopulate the earth. So this is a war of ideologies.
I meant in terms of saving their own skin if they got sick. And notice that David Rockefeller lived to the age of 101. That's a pretty good life, 101. So he obviously did not die of cancer. So he was spared that.
People are claiming he had 7 heart transplants to live that long. I don't believe that.
How many people had to die for him to get 6 or 7 heart transplants? That seems odd to me.
I don't believe
like
he did, but...
That sounds like an Aztec.
Now here's World News Daily Report. Rockefeller's 6 heart
like
transplants successful at age 99. No, David Rockefeller did not have 7 heart transplants. He only had 6. Who is David Rockefeller's heart transplant? Yeah, so there's articles out there, but I don't... Many fooled by a report of David Rockefeller's 6 heart transplants. I don't think he had any heart transplants.
Suzanne, that's too many heart
smart
transplants.
Enough.
6 heart transplants. That's crazy.
I don't think anybody can withstand that.
That reminds me of something out of an Aztec ritual from 500 years ago, you know, where they cut out the hearts and everything. It's too bizarre, almost. All those heart transplants. Give me more hearts. Give me more hearts. I want another heart. Give me a heart. You know, I don't know. You could make a funny story out of that.
You can die of other things besides heart failure. Now, they're saying he did die of heart failure, but it was in his sleep. You know, he died in his sleep. It was just time for him to go, you know? And, you know, got to go into account.
Maybe he was having a very vivid dream. You know, he could have been having a very, very vivid dream and just kind of whooshed him away into the next world, you know? Interesting.
I think it's just one of those urban legends, you know?
What's that? What's an urban legend? Which one? What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. There's lots of urban legends out there. Now, his brother died supposedly of a stroke in his mistress's bed. Well, now there's alternative stories that he actually died at the hospital, but that's where he had his stroke, was Nelson Rockefeller. He was former governor.
Which Rockefeller was it? I thought they died in the arms of their lover or their hooker or something like that. Which one was that?
Nelson Rockefeller, David's brother. Nelson Rockefeller died like 30 years ago.
The vice president of the United States, Nelson Rockefeller? Or he was going to be?
Yeah, he died
anyway.
Shortly after he and Ford left office. He was Ford's...
Yes.
Now, before Nixon left office, his vice president, Agnew, resigned. So I don't know why Agnew resigned. I was a kid. I just knew that Agnew resigned about 6 months before Richard Nixon. So before Richard Nixon resigned, he named Gerald Ford his vice president. So when Richard Nixon resigned, Gerald Ford became president, and he named Nelson Rockefeller, former governor of New York, as his vice president. Now, having lived under Nelson Rockefeller, I knew what a power monger he was. And I was a kid, and I knew, oh my God, there's going to be attempts on Ford's life. And there were. There were 2 that I was aware of, and now I've since read that there were a lot of attempts on Ford's life, you know, a la, we now know from Roger Stone, a la LBJ and JFK, and a la the attempt on Reagan's life by Bush operatives, you know, because Bush was Bush Senior was Reagan's VP, and that, you know, this was the trend. You know, if you couldn't get elected president, you become vice president and knock off the pres. And there were multiple attempts on Ford's life, and you know, their term was less than a full term. You know, Nixon was in for a year or two before he resigned, and then so Ford finished his term and then lost against Carter in 76 because people were fed up with Republicans by then, and Republicans never cleaned up their act until Trump came in and forced them to. And they're still fighting him. You know, they're fighting him over this health care thing. Anyway, so, you know, the cancer industry is a hoax, and now I'm more awake than I was before to HIV being possibly a hoax. I've heard people say that HIV was like the first genetically engineered disease that they launched on the public. And, you know, we know they intentionally injected people with the cancer in the polio vaccine. They knowingly let loose on the public with the cancer, simian virus 40 that is known to cause cancer in human beings. Mm-hmm. They knew that it was in the polio vaccine, and they launched it on the public anyway. But that wasn't necessarily genetic engineered, but it was there, and they knew it was there, and they launched it anyway. Mm. And so, it's kind of a big ugly world out there. Let me check we don't have any people. You need to be calling. You know what? I need to take two commercial breaks, and we're running long. So let me do that. I just want to take on these people. So we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer Radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are 7 of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
There are reports that say sitting all day at work is just as unhealthy as smoking. There is a hot new health trend called earthing, where you leave your shoes at home and you go out for a walk in the park. However, most of us work all day. This is where Serenity Rug comes in. Serenity Rug is meant to let you feel the grass beneath your feet while you have to stay inside and get your work done. This revolutionary footrest encourages movement and blood flow so you can feel better while working. Relieves muscle tension, improves circulation at your own desk while you're working. Anyway, please check out SerenityRug.com. That's SerenityRug.com.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
And that Proof Negative Show follows directly after this one in a little over 20 minutes, and so I will have to squeeze in one more commercial break because I just found this topic so fascinating I forgot to run the commercial, so I will have to squeeze in another one. But anyway, you know, give us a call, anybody who wants to join for the last few minutes here, 347-324-3704, and I can pull up some more articles that we've got here. Surviving HIV without drugs. Manchester man lives with HIV for 30 years without medication. This is Manchester, UK. And I think it's becoming more positive, more common than we know. How has Magic Johnson survived 20 years with HIV? This is LiveScience.com. Are they going to tell us? This was published in 2011.
How did he survive 20 years?
Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson. He gave up basketball for a couple of years. And then he came back, you know, because people didn't want to be sweating and bumping into him on the court, but he came back and they accepted him back. So 1991, Los Angeles Lakers point guard Irvin Magic Johnson shocked the world when he announced that he had contracted HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. After the press conference, the perception was that Johnson had just pronounced his own death sentence. Yet 20 years later, the now 52-year-old Johnson, and this is written in 2011, is going as strong as ever in his roles as a sports analyst, businessman, and HIV activist. In 1991, when most of what people knew about HIV/AIDS was that it led to death at a young age, this outcome might have seemed impossible. So why is Johnson still alive? The answer to Johnson's survival is far from quote-unquote magic. According to reports, he takes the same kinds of drugs that are available to other HIV patients in the developed world and increasingly in impoverished nations in Africa and Asia where the disease still runs rampant. Many people have lived with HIV even longer than Johnson. There is nothing unique about magic, said Spencer Leap, senior epidemiologist and HIV/AIDS research coordinator for the Florida Consortium for HIV/AIDS Research. There are still people alive and kicking and doing very well 20 and 30 years after infection. And they have a link to a weird article to circumcision for HIV. I don't believe so. Leaf said that in the state of Florida alone, hundreds of patients have hung on since becoming infected with HIV in the early 80s when the first confirmed AIDS case turned up in the United States. Johnson and these people are still in the minority. According to research and estimates by the CDC, about 1.2 million Americans have HIV, and 20% of them are undiagnosed. Approximately 50,000 people become infected each year, and more than 18,000 die annually, stopping HIV in the backcourt. The key with Johnson and others has been preventing their incurable disease from progressing into full-blown AIDS. Upon infection with human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, a person's immune system kills off nearly all of the virus and infected cells, but some small number remain. And over time, those HIV cells replicate. Then, usually 10 years after initial infection, the viral load reaches a critical count and the virus begins killing off the vital immune cells that protect us against infections. It goes on and on, but they have meds that slam dunk HIV. You know what? I don't believe it. I think he did something tricky. What's her name? Karen Allen, the actress, did with her Lyme disease, and she got herself a zapper, a Hulda Clark zapper. And she her first session with it at her chiropractor's office. She never had Lyme again after struggling for years. Yeah. Now,
we should look
I think
at the literature on that.
I
don't think that's everything that I would. That's nothing that I've looked up, you know, is the zapper's effect
what?
On the HIV.
Hulda Clark stuff?
Yeah, just in case it helps.
Well,
Who knows? Maybe somebody had experiences.
Well, maybe the drugs just don't affect him. Maybe they just don't affect him. But a lot of people die from the drugs. That's what those people in Spain were telling us. That, you know, all their friends that took the drugs died from the drugs, and that's the story we keep hearing with cancer.
Yeah.
And I've known people who've died of cancer drugs. So this doesn't fit with what
I'm
seeing in life. Now, so either it's true, or he's being paid to say it's true.
Mm-hmm.
That he found some alternative. But I'm jaded. I'm sorry?
Susanna, I have something to contribute.
I use
DuckDuckGo instead of Google search because I don't like Google keeping track of my searches. Anyway, I used DuckDuckGo, and I searched on long life with HIV. So let me read you some of these. The first one is from verywell.com. It says, by and large, the outlook is extremely positive with the proven effectiveness of, and then they talk about some drugs. And another one says, and this is from Consumer Health Day, said, sticking with your medical plan is the single most important thing you can do to improve your chances for long, healthy life. Now, the next one is WebMD, and that says, with modern medications, many people with HIV live long, healthy lives. Next one is AIDSMAP.com. It says, longer than the average life expectancy of someone with HIV. Oh, somebody who was diagnosed with AIDS back in 1991, and they've been taking their treatment regularly, and they lived 10 years. I don't know if they lived 11 years, but they lived 10 years out there. The next one, healthtap.com. The current outlook for HIV infection is excellent. If one gets diagnosed promptly, follows the doctor's advice, and takes the recommended medications faithfully, all of these are saying basically get diagnosed and follow your doctor's advice. You must follow your doctor's advice. So, the next.
Well,
one is,
I mean, it depends what you searched on. I searched on surviving HIV without drugs or something like that, and you get a different lineup.
Yeah, because this just gives basically a look at what the medical community says. It does say now that a young person with HIV has a life expectancy similar to that of the general population, because I guess for young people, and now with the current treatments being better than they were 20 years ago, I guess, you know, if we believe this, then a person could
wonder if the truth doesn't lie somewhere in the middle, like some babies you can give them a round of vaccines and they might be a little fussy for a while, but then they're fine. Could be that some people don't react badly to the HIV drugs and some people do. And I don't know how to tell in advance before it starts affecting you badly what's going to happen.
If
the drugs killed everybody instantly, they wouldn't stay in business very long.
Maybe it's the ones that are not really thriving very well. There's a failure to thrive element. You know, maybe they're pale and, you know, and they're not eating well, and they're just not that healthy, and of course then you give them
like that one guy, he did die a sudden death of a lung thing, and
maybe those kind of kids also are more subject to getting SIDS, you know, to having SIDS for one reason or another. It's because do you think that most SIDS is caused by vaccines?
Oh, SIDS? Yeah, I do.
Okay.
They do.
Is there corroboration for that? Is there corroboration, like parents?
Well, actually, at the Institute for Health. I'll pull it up. What is it called? Regression. Infant mortality versus infant vaccination regression. I bookmarked it.
I thought in most cases they blame the parents for letting the child sleep on their stomach or something, or, you know, by a pillow or some crazy.
Who knows? Maybe
they would not take the blame. They would not take the blame for
it. We could probably find some stories where they've taken the other children of a baby that dies. This is our own National Institute of Health. www.ncbi.nlm.nih.gov. They actually have a case study, infant mortality rates regressed against number of vaccine doses routinely given. Is there a biochemical or synergistic toxicity? And they wave a bunch of hands, and they have two tables. They have one is a list of infant mortality rates by country, top 34 countries, and they have another table of summary of international immunization schedules, vaccines recommended required prior to 1 year of age in 34 nations. So they have the countries with the most vaccines and the countries with the highest infant mortality rates, and they match up pretty well, and the U.S. is right near the top of both of them. We have the highest infant mortality rate and the highest infant vaccination rate.
That needs to be
well, you know what they did in here? They went through all this trouble collecting all this data, all this trouble, and then they had the nerve to say, oh, but correlation doesn't mean causation. It's like, well, if you hit somebody on the head with a hammer, you can pretty well correlate it to the broken skull, you know?
It is correlating.
So,
should that not be posted on Facebooks and on and links on Twitter?
Yeah, I paste it all the time on Facebook. I get into discussions in a lot of the anti-vax groups, and I'm like, look, the NIH lays the data out right here for you. The more vaccines you give a baby, the more likely he is to die. And
that's international.
But they wave hands right in the abstract here. Doesn't mean that it actually is causing it. Now, I need to complete my blog article. I started a blog article on they've actually started shuffling the package inserts as far as the DTaP is concerned. Because the DTaP vaccine a year and a half ago listed right in autism in the DTaP vaccine and a couple paragraphs down, and they're together in the same paragraph that autism and SIDS have both been reported after vaccination with this vaccine. And so I took screenshots, I blogged it, I put it all over the media groups, and even at some point, National News picked up on it, you know, and people were passing it around. So what they did two things. They renamed the vaccine to another name. So the Tripedia vaccine, it's not Tripedia anymore. It's got some other name, and I have to finish blogging about this and doing the screenshots.
Oh, wow.
And the second thing they did is they renamed it.
The vaccine was so bad that they had to rename it to hide it.
You can still, when you pull up DTaP vaccine now for infants, you get a different drug. And that's because they rewrote the package insert. They have renamed, they totally removed autism from it, but there is still a list of autism symptoms, but they don't call it autism now. They just list the symptoms. So that's supposed to smoke you, you know. And then the second thing they did is they renamed SIDS apnea. But apnea just means stopping breathing. And there's two kinds of apnea. There's obstructive apnea of, you know, where you'll see it in, you know, guys with, you know, big, you know, burly, whatever, but their throat passages kind of collapse while they're sleeping, and that's called obstructive sleep apnea. Your windpipe, you know, what their official name, collapses while you're sleeping and obstructs your breathing, and so you go get the CPAP machine, constant positive air pressure. But there's neurological apnea where your brain just forgets to breathe, and that's, they're not distinguishing in here, but, you know, SIDS is when a baby stops breathing and dies, or you know, the succession, you know, the baby, you just find the baby dead. Okay, he stopped breathing. So they renamed apnea SIDS. That's the two things, they renamed SIDS apnea. That's the two things that they've done to the DTaP vaccine. And I need to finish blogging it and making the screenshots and stuff. And they'll be on madscientist.exposed so people can start sharing it on social media.
So what they get is apnea.
And that was because we were sharing around, the other package insert before they renamed it. But they had to rename the drug in order to give it a new package insert.
Well, then you have to go back into the media now and say, oh, by the way, here's my formal article on this. I just want everyone to know that they have renamed the vaccine and they've renamed syndromes. Yeah.
I started it. It's just a lot of graphic work because you take screenshots of the different paragraphs here and there and you circle them in red and you say, look at this, you know, and but you know what? We're getting near the end. I need to take one more quick. What do you call it? Commercial break. So I'm sorry. I need to take one more quick one. No, none of these. They have some funny spoof ones here, but I'm not gonna do them.
Spoof ones?
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich. and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite.
I almost skipped that one because I didn't know what it was about.
What was that one?
Just get involved. Get involved. And I know Freedomizer Radio is looking for more radio hosts. They have some open time slots. So people contact Proof Negative through the show that's coming up after this one. There's a chat box on freedomizerradio.com or email them through that. There's a contact form. And if you're inspired to start a radio show too, here's one more.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? Join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal radio show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
Truth Quest Radio with Tia Severino. What is the truth? And what does it mean to go on a quest for truth? Is it even possible to know, in today's media-controlled environment, what is truth and what is propaganda? Join us on Saturdays at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, at blogtalkradio.com/freedomizer for the Truth Quest radio show with Tia Severino, where we will be asking the questions that you want answers to.
Anyway, so Freedomizer Radio is where people are feeling inspired to start speaking the truth, because the more we shine lights on all these frauds and these people that would control us, the less likely they can get away with it. And that's how Trump got in, is because he bypassed the media. We could read his tweets. We could watch all his speeches. For all his rallies, they're still online. And so I encourage my friends in Europe to check it out. If you're getting mixed messages from your media about Trump, you know, just go see what he has to say. And he's got RFK Jr. on the case for looking for, you know, safer vaccines and making sure that we have integrity in our sciences, because we need to drain the swamp and the CDC too. And it's HIV, it's vaccines, it's cancer. It's heart disease. It's everything. It goes on. And if you're inspired to speak out, there's other issues besides medical issues. And so
that's a wonderful spokesman. That's a wonderful spokesman to join the Trump campaign against the vaccines is that Kennedy grandchild, you know, the Kennedy, because that should theoretically bring in
a Democrat.
Well, don't you think? with the Kennedy clan, you know, heritage, don't you think that him being included in there would bring out a bunch of Democrats into the,
I don't know.
To come say,
I don't know. A lot of them, particularly in California, they like to bow down to the to the big pharmas, you know, and they have this new this new law where if they wanted to, they can just arrest people that are suspected of having the flu. So that's why we did this show on the mobile flu tester.
Suspected of having checkpoint the flu tester. And what would it be? The purpose of it would be to give them a shot.
It's all geared towards seeing vaccines. Can you imagine if you're, you know, if you have HIV positive and you have a baby and the baby's HIV positive and you decline to give the baby the drugs, that CPS would come in and swoop in and take that baby. I'm sure
they'll just take the baby.
And even if the drugs kill the baby. So we're definitely running out of time here.
I believe in parental rights. That's the tragedy.
There's a lot of money in taking people's parental rights away. So with that, I'm going to have to sign off here.
Those people in California should go to Arizona. If they go to Arizona, they won't be having somebody breathing down their neck like that.
They're trying to grab here. I have got to sign out. Just talk to you. See you next week. We'll be right back.